I just want to say a couple of things. One is that the National Women's Health Network has been consistently dealing with this question of misleading drug and device ads for various products that women use. And the Take a Stand Against False Ads for Breast Implants sheet is something I happen to have on hand. So. And I've decided to change my presentation, so I'm actually going to go through some of these quickly and omit some of them because I wanted to focus on statin drugs in women because I think it's actually critical issue that's not getting much attention, unlike many of the other examples we have out there. I'm also going to begin with the punchline, which is the focus of really why we're talking about a lot of these drugs, is what might the FDA do to prevent doing more harm than good? And I just want to mention four things that I would support. One of them is give the FDA the ability to block direct-to-consumer or DTC ads for drugs that have very serious safety concerns. Sometimes drugs with serious safety concerns still get on the market, but when FDA scientists have very serious concerns, they should also have the power to block DTC ads. Second recommendation is to pass legislation that would give us the 2-year moratorium on DTC ads for newly approved drugs. Some of you may know that Senator John Edwards just about a week or two ago endorsed this proposal. It's been a little bit controversial. Certainly banning all DTC ads is controversial. Probably wouldn't pass constitutional muster. But a number of legal scholars, some of them publishing as recently as last week, have said that there would be a very solid basis for the 2-year moratorium because you can demonstrate now a serious public health risk when you don't have a 2-year moratorium. So that's something that some of us who are very interested in all the Democrats running for president are hoping to push them on and hope that they will endorse this as well. The third is to give FDA the ability to levy more stringent fines. What if a drug company puts out a very misleading ad, or device company? We want the FDA to be able to come in with some penalties that mean something. And then, of course, in general, one might give the FDA more powers. There was an attempt to do that with the recent reauthorization bill, and actually there were some good things that got left in the bill, but a lot of good things. Certainly this 2-year moratorium idea got excised. And it's not just because of the power of pharmaceutical industry, it's also the power of the advertising industry, which came in and probably had even a more powerful influence on making sure that portion of the bill got excised. So now you have the conclusion. But I'm going to go back and just talk about a couple of things. These things probably are all known to you. You know, why are DTC ads problematic? And a lot of studies are out there. Benefits are overstated, risks understated, FDA warning letters issued after the ads run, and rarely do we see corrective ads required, but who gets to see them and read them after the fact? And then right now, you know, up to now, withdrawal of an ad has been the only penalty. Not much incentive to do the right thing. And then, of course, we've got an increased cost to the system without additional benefits. The most highly advertised drugs accompanied by promotional campaigns geared to physicians sell extremely well. About 40% of DTC spending is on 10 of the new and expensive drugs designed for long-term use. They sell quite well. Now, this is not surprising to some of you, but there's a larger and larger portion of DTC ad money being spent, or I should say larger portion of the advertising budget. And if you look back to 2000, for every DTC dollar spent, there was $420 produced in additional drug sales. So that shows that this is a technique or an approach that really will work. Now, we all know what the number one best-selling drug is in the world. What is it? Yes. See, this audience would know, Lipitor. And then several statin drugs are in the top 10. I'll tell you, if you go on a college campus, can you guess what almost everyone will say is the first answer? Yes. And then I say, what about the fact that only 50% of the population at this point takes it? And they say, oh, right. And then they come up with other. And somebody comes up with Lipitor eventually. Yes, that's right, of course. And also, not just young men with any sort of erectile dysfunction problems. It's to have an erection for 4 hours into the night, so it's bigger and better. It has nothing to do with the original reasons that Viagra got put on the market. Now, TV ads are brief and usually don't name both the drug name and the condition treated. Otherwise, you'd have to have a long list of stuff. Typically, one sees either reminder ads or ads that promote help seeking. Reminder ads promote the drug name but not the condition treated. Naming both would require this fuller disclosure. And help-seeking ads describe the disease or condition but no specific drug is named. It's usually see your doctor, and if they've done their job to make sure the doctor gives you the drug that they want you to get, it all works anyway. This we already have done. Oh, but that's something you may not know, which is that there were more than $13 billion in sales in 2005. Now, Lipitor is losing market share to other statin drugs, but still doing quite well. Now, there are some unique issues for women regarding statins. Right now, there's no best quality evidence to support use of statins among women who have elevated cholesterol levels and no heart disease or diabetes present. Yet lots of women who simply have elevated cholesterol levels are being put on statins increasingly. Women with high HDLs, high-density lipoproteins, obtain a protective effect that generally is not augmented by the addition of statin drugs. Using statin drugs introduces the risk of experiencing serious negative drug reactions that would be otherwise avoidable. For example, brain fog, memory loss, loss of muscle strength, and loss of balance, and then smaller percentages, but there is some women who experience the beginnings of kidney failure, particularly with long-term use. And I think this is one reason why you really want to demonstrate that you've got some benefit, because if there are lots of downsides to taking a drug, you really want the benefit proven, because the trade-offs change. I'm not even going to talk about this. Now, reducing LDL, low-density lipoprotein levels among high-risk and moderate-risk individuals has not been proven to be effective in preventing coronary heart disease. And lower LDL levels have not been proven to decrease the risk of coronary heart disease in people of all ages. And I want to talk a little bit about this paper that I mentioned earlier. It is entitled, and I hope some of you will sign up to get it, Evidence for Caution, Women and Statin Use by Harriet Rosenberg and Danielle Allard. And it was produced for Women in Health Protection and published this June. And she looks at the representation of women in primary and secondary prevention trials, the extrapolation of benefit from men, cholesterol levels as risk factors for coronary vascular disease in women, and other modifiable cardiovascular risk factors. In Canada, you know, for women between 30 and 79, it's cancer that's the major cause of mortality. Heart disease only begins to kill more women at the age of 80 and over. So this is one of the reasons, and it's, of course, different for men. I just want to say a word about cholesterol for people who aren't familiar. It's a sterile alcohol that's carried in the body in packages called lipoproteins, these high-density and low-density lipoproteins. And it's very important for signal transmission, brain functions, cell wall membranes, and a host of very vital functions in the human body. Cholesterolization of cardiovascular disease has intensified in this society since the 2001 American Cholesterol Guidelines came out. Then in 2004, we saw the National Cholesterol Education Program, NCEP, guidelines that urged that cholesterol levels be monitored from in women and men from age 20 onward, and that acceptable levels be lower than previously advised. So now we're seeing a push towards younger individuals and individuals with even lower levels of cholesterol getting statin drugs. Now, high cholesterol levels are not a statistically significant risk factor for sudden cardiac death among women. There's an article in Circulation from 2003, the prospective study of sudden cardiac death among women in the U.S. that discusses this. I do also want to mention that these 2004 guidelines had about 9 authors, 7 of whom had significant financial relationships with pharmaceutical companies. And this wasn't actually released until after the guidelines came out and everybody started following them. There's also Italian research that shows no benefit of low LDL cholesterol levels in older women. Jim Wright and John Abramson in Lancet recently explore statistical problems that overestimate the effects of statin interventions. And the title of this is Are Lipid-Lowering Guidelines Evidence-Based? What's interesting is the conclusion of a very major study. This was a 2004 meta-analysis by Walsh and Mignoni and JAMA, concluded that there are reduced coronary heart disease events, but no effect on total mortality. It's particularly a concern for women. When you look at statin use, and they looked at 1,500 articles, only 21 clinical trials included women, and only 9 published results by sex. Almost two-thirds of the women came from 2 studies, and both have raised particular concerns among people who critique them. Thank you. Now, I want to talk about why this is an important issue right now as we look to Mevacor being considered for OTC use. Does anyone know when those hearings are, or did they just happen? They're about to happen, or they happened just this week. I know that they were on... It's in a few weeks. End of November. Okay. In 2004, the FDA also had hearings to consider OTC use. And Merck argued then, they're the manufacturers of Mevacor, that there was no causal link for the 7 cases of birth defects in 105 statin-exposed pregnancies. But the March of Dimes, the Organization of Teratology Information Services, and other researchers disagreed quite strongly with Merck. This is a particular concern because we are seeing more younger women being put on statin drugs. And younger women are told to use contraception, but what about younger women not using effective contraception when taking statin drugs? We know there's an elevated risk of miscarriage for pregnant women, and there are infant development problems for the babies that are breastfeeding. And these are concerns that were voiced in 2004. They'll probably be voiced again. Half of all our pregnancies are unplanned, so women may well be on statin drugs when they get pregnant, when they're on a statin drug. And given the rising maternal age of women in this country, that's another cause for concern because use of statin drugs go up with age, and so we should be concerned with OTC use of statin drugs given that phenomenon of childbearing women. I think I want to mention about the whole issue of statin drug use is that if you read some of the larger studies and if you look at what Harriet Rosenberg and her colleague just produced, you will see a lot of extrapolating from men when people are recommending what women ought to do, sort of similar to what happened with the heart disease issue. And we really need to be very careful and stop doing that and need to give the FDA some power here to do something because this is such a commonly used drug and we are seeing more and more women speaking about their problems. Now, how many of you are familiar with Dr. Beatrice Gollum, who's a researcher at UCSD, University of California in San Diego? She is NIH-funded to do a very major study of statin health effects. She is looking at women in particular, but men as well. And what she's finding in her most recently published article, which was about a month ago, is that there's a very high percentage of physicians who discount problems that both men and women report with statin use. Things like the brain fog, the memory loss, the loss of balance, the muscle atrophy. These are very serious issues that should be taken seriously, and because they're not then reported by physicians because they discount them, we're not getting a true picture of what's happening with statin drug use. And Dr. Gollum's work hopefully will help reverse this trend. And the conclusions of her study, and actually similar analyses of physicians' tendency to discount patient complaints when it comes to drug use, I think that more attention to this problem may help us also reverse the tendency to think of statin drugs use as mostly a good thing rather than a potentially bad thing. I know I'm almost at the end of my time, so I'm just going to quickly go through the last of these. I've sort of covered these already. I want to say that... Yes, I do have 1 minute. Okay. yes, I know. These I've already said. I was going to mention bisphosphonates briefly since that was in the APHA booklet. And I did want to mention that, you know, you may improve bone density, but the track record for fracture prevention is modest at best, and long-term use may make bones more brittle and thus more susceptible to fracture. And also some of us are quite familiar with the jaw atrophy problem, which has now been published about, particularly with long-term use. And that's no picnic when you develop a crumbling jaw. And I want to say that the groups that are represented here do subscribe to the precautionary principle of public health. We want to promote a view of public health that stresses primary prevention, identifying and eliminating disease-causing agents in our food, water, and air. This is what it is, if you don't know it. The Science and Environmental Health Network, SEHN.org, is a great website. And I'm going to skip this because of time, but I think the hunt for a pink Viagra is yet another example of priming the pump for a drug that is probably going to have some benefits but a whole lot of problems for women. And if you want to know more about this issue, go to the Campaign for a New View of Women's Sexual Problems. And I want to point out that some of us are a little concerned about the new guiding principles on DTC advertising that pharma has come out with. They want to encourage this patient-physician dialogue. They want to improve consumer understanding of the risks and benefits of prescription medicines and motivate people to overcome barriers to healthy behavior, but that seems to be usually last on the list. And I also want to mention that in Europe right now, there is something called the Pharmaceutical Forum, which is dominated by pharmaceutical companies, and they are trying to reverse the current trend there, which is to block DTC advertising and to really point out or push the idea that there are greater benefits to allow DTC ads rather than negatives. And so although we don't see that happening yet, and I think New Zealand and the U.S. are still the two industrialized countries that have a whole lot of DTC ads, there's a lot of pressure to change this everywhere else.